Welcome to the Newsprint Commando. I'm your host, Ed Moore. If you want to send feedback, you can go to the website and leave comments there. It is comicbooknoise/TNC. That's the letters Tango November Charlie. I am indieman@gmail.com is the email address. Indie is INDIE. Teal Productions on Facebook is the best way to get in touch. TEAL as in the color. Also, Teal Productions is on Twitter, as is News P Commando. And Teal Productions is on Blue Sky. Ooh, new shiny. Today I'm looking at Samurai issue number 6 from Aerosel Comics, published April 1986. Sad news, as this second season of Newsprint Commando is winding down. This will be the final issue of our Aerosel Samurai coverage, unfortunately, to some extent. But fortunately, to some extent, we get to move on and look at some other books next season. But I have issue 6 here in front of me. Two stories in this. The first is about two-thirds of the book. The second is about the final third. The second story doesn't have anything to do with Samurai. But the first story is scripted by Barry Blair and Patrick McEwen, penciled and inked by Patrick McEwen, and lettered by Davin Valiquette. As we open, well, first let's look at the front cover. We have a picture of Bruce Lee. Oh, no, I'm sorry. This is Samurai. This is Toshiro, our protagonist. Bare-chested, holding a sword. Samurai logo, Shikon. Shikon, S-H-I-K-O-N, is the title of the story, apparently. Inside front cover, we have an image. Now, this front cover image is by Mr. McEwen. But the inside cover is by Mr. Barry Blair. And it's another picture of our protagonist, Toshiro, Samurai. And his young protege, Kwan, I believe is who that's supposed to be. First story page is a gentleman with a large 9mm shoved in his mouth, and it's just a headshot of him sweating with his hand up and the pistol being held by a hand with the barrel in the gentleman's mouth. And he's being told, "She's got a friend of mine. You going to kill him, Homer?" asks Kwan. This scene is with Homer and Kwan. "Shut up, kid. Where can I find her? Aren't you going to kill him?" "Maybe, if you're good." And the gentleman, because Homer has pulled the gun from out of his mouth so he can speak, indicates, "Mitsukoshi building, penthouse." "Thanks, back to the hotel, kid." "Oh, but Homer," and interestingly enough, the image is of Homer pointing the pistol at Kwan, which I don't quite understand that. I'm not sure why he would do that. Then we cut to the big bad for this issue, who goes by the name Kamikaze, rather, I don't know, on the nose, maybe? I'm not sure what that is, but she is disappointed in Peter because Peter was supposed to lead Samurai directly to her so that she could kill him, take the swords that he has. But instead, Peter told Samurai a roundabout way to get to her through the sewers. And ultimately, Kamikaze was able to accomplish what she wanted, and that was take the swords from Samurai, but not in the fashion in which she wanted, she intended. So she is going to punish Peter, and we have a series of 6 very thin panels that take up the bottom half of page 3 of the book. And it's Peter reaching into his jacket. Second panel is Kamikaze holding a sword. Third panel is Peter pulling a pistol that looks like some sort of 45 or maybe a snub-nosed 38. Out of his inside jacket pocket. Kamikaze is lunging at him, and we just see just the barest parts of her body, her elbow and her midriff as they're moving across the panel. And then we see the pistol extended, and we see the sword held up in front of Kamikaze's face, obscuring part of her face. So my assumption is by those panels that she is going to punish Peter and she is moving at him with her sword. He is pulling his pistol to defend himself. Rather cinematic looking, actually, in its methodology there. We have Kwan, who is being, I think, watched from outside the window because I don't believe this is... Well, no, I'm sorry. It's Samurai coming back to where they're staying. That's who it turns out to be. Quan is reading. Samurai reaches down and pulls the magazine out from in front of his face. Says, "Where's Homer?" Quan tells him, "He's looking for you. I mean, he's going to see Kamikaze." "Where?" says Samurai. "Penthouse of the Mitsukoshi building." Slam, as Samurai exits, closing the door to the hotel room that they're in here. We see a panel of the Dirty City, just a nondescript urban cityscape kind of thing here with train tracks. We see Homer walking through the lobby of a large building. Looks like it could be a hotel. He walks up to the elevator, tells the elevator attendant penthouse, and the attendant says, "I'm sorry, that's a private residence. I'll have to ask for identification." But Homer's pulled out his pistol and has shoved it into the ribs, action and doubt, of course, the ribs of the attendant. Page 6 again uses a series of thin panels, this time 5 thin panels that take up about a quarter of the page overall. And it's a sequence showing down the hall, past the elevator, towards the destination of where Homer is going. And he's thinking, there's a tip in it for you if you're here when I get back. And the attendant is laying out on the floor, unconscious. Probably we didn't see any gun reports written here, any sound noises, right? So I don't imagine that he's been shot. So Homer must have just knocked him out, so he can't interfere. Comes up to a corner, and as he looks around the corner towards the doors of the room, the penthouse that he's going to here, there are a couple other ne'er-do-wells guarding the outside door. And he decides, well, I need to try and make this quick. So he shoots the first dude in the head, but the second dude has an automatic weapon, riddles the wall behind Homer because he has taken a dive onto the floor to avoid that. He thinks, here at the corner, I'm pinned. Can't sit here too long or I'm cooked. No way around it. I'm going to have to use the direct approach. And he dives out from behind the corner there of the hallway, shooting the gentleman twice, but takes one in the shoulder, whereas we see the guard get gut shot. And actually, the bullet comes out his back. We have an image of camera angle is from behind the guard. And so we see the bullet exit. But in the exchange, Homer took one in the shoulder. So much for a quiet entrance, he thinks, as he's laying there. Cut back to Kamikaze, and we see Peter's hand that was grasping the pistol lying on the floor. She tells him, "Be thankful it was your hand and not your head. I want you out of Tokyo. If you attempt to return, I will have you killed. Now go." And an attendant comes in, it's not an attendant, I'm sorry. Homer has walked into the penthouse and says, "Pardon me. Sorry for interrupting, but I couldn't help noticing that you're holding a sword that belongs to a friend of mine." Kamikaze just looks over her shoulder kind of menacingly and says, "He was not worthy." That may be so, but I'd like to know where he is," Homer says. We see here crouching in the darkness this other creature that Kamikaze has ownership of, control over. Kind of a were-wolfy, were-rat kind of humanoid kind of creature, like a were-rat or a were-something human can change into it. It attacks Homer, and the panels are, I know they're trying to go for moody, but everything is kind of disorienting as you look at these panels. And it started way back when Kamikaze first confronted Peter, but apparently the room that they're in is dark. There are no lights inside. So the only light in the room is coming from the city outside the window, except that there are blinds on the window. And so the blinds are breaking the light into lines of light and dark. The rest of the room is dark. So as people are moving around or they want to show people, they're doing so in this shuttered black and white striped lighting. And it doesn't work for me too well visually, because not only are they in this light dark banding, but of course when it throws on the body, if it's on the wall, it's a very distinctive light dark, right? But on the body, it turns into more a shade of light and a shade of dark with the whatever human body kind of silhouetted or shadowed. It's a very difficult on the eye type of drawing. And what happens is this were creature attacks Homer. And so these two bodies now are entwined as this feral creature is, you know, clawing and grasping at Homer, wrapping itself around him, whatever. So now the two bodies are not distinct because they're twirled or twined around each other. Plus you have total blackness in the black in the background, and you have this on the portions of the wall that are not blocked by the figures that we're looking at. You have this distinctive white, black, it's a diagonal pattern of light, dark on the bodies. It goes to a grayish light, dark on top of the fact that they're in the darkness, on top of the fact that they're intertwined, the two of them. And I'm sure there's some amount of movement in the picture as well. All of this makes it a very vomit-inducing kind of movement-y kind of, you know, oh, my eyes can't adjust to that. It makes me uncomfortable, like I'm going to puke kind of feel, right? Because it, yeah. I don't know. Too much of an attempt at atmosphere, I think, for me is what it is. It didn't work well visually. So we turn the page, and now Toshiro's here, Samurai. He kicks the door down. We still have this, yeah, black and white gradient all over the place. Kamikaze says she doesn't know where he is. He was here. I took the swords from him. Now I don't know where he is. Toshiro kicks down the door, and Kamikaze says, I beg to differ. I do have knowledge of his whereabouts. Fight continues. Homer loses his weapon. This were creature turns its sights on Toshiro. Also, Kamikaze, who is holding a sword, is focused on Toshiro. And off to the side, or back behind Toshiro, we have a sumo wrestler that is one of her attendants or whatever as well. Several times in this next sequence, we see someone holding figurines that represent each of the individuals that we're watching, moving those figurines. So I don't know if they're being controlled. Again, I don't know if this is supposed to be some sort of atmospheric something. I'm not sure what they're getting into, but the samurai, or the, excuse me, sumo wrestler rushes to Shiro. Several pages of fighting now between the samurai and Toshiro. Toshiro's kicks and chops and what have you don't seem to be having much effect on the sumo wrestler. He gets close enough and he gets Toshiro in a lower back breaking bear hug. Homer finally gets to his weapon. Kamikaze, we see she's dressed in a seductive nightgownish kind of thing, like a baby doll onesie or something like that. So she's, yeah, they're trying to be sexy with her. There's a scene here where we're watching past her. She's in the foreground, and they've drawn the butt shot and her holding the sword. And then farther in the background is the sumo trying to crush the life out of samurai. Again, trying to be titillating, I guess. I don't know. Didn't work out too well in my mind. Just as Toshiro is about to succumb, bleeding out of every orifice because of the pressure. I'm not sure if it works that way, but it does in comics. Homer puts a hole in the sumo's head. Sumo staggers, finally lets go of samurai as he falls out of the window and out of the building backwards, plummeting to the ground. Homer holds a weapon on this were creature that was the first of Kamikaze's agents that Toshiro took out when he kicked the door down in the penthouse. Homer holds his weapon on this thing and says, give us the swords or this kid's next. Kamikaze says, kill him then. You cannot have the swords. They're worth more than any one person's life. Until you fully understand their power, you are unfit to possess them. And then she recants a bit and says, the Daito is yours, Geijin. Take it and go. When you're worthy of the Shoto, then you will return. He picks up the sword and bows at her and says, Domo arigato Kamikaze-san. And she responds, sayonara Toshiro-san. You'll be back. And I didn't look it up, but I believe samurai swords typically came in a matched pair. To our eye, we would recognize a longer and a shorter sword. I believe that she gave Toshiro the longer of the two swords, the Daito. I should have looked that up. But so she gave him the What we over here in the West, I believe, would call a katana. But because it's part of a matched pair, the verbiage changes for how they're referred to. But ultimately, I believe she gave him the larger of the matched pair and she kept the shorter, which the words that I am familiar with are like katana and wakizashi, I believe. But she is using the terms daito, daito, and shoto, shoto. Not as familiar with those words. Maybe they're more formal. But yeah, so the story ends. You'll be back. She's looking out the blinded window again, light, dark, out into the dirty city of Tokyo with her little were creature squatting here at her feet. And then the last image is a real close-up of looking through one of the blinds at the city and then the word someday. So that's her Kamikaze's final word. You'll be back someday. Which is interesting because it definitely feels like an end to the book. But I don't believe the title ends here. So this is just a definitive ending to this particular story. Letters page next. And then just the start of another story with no title. This is scripted, penciled, inked, and lettered to us by Genghis, I believe. G-I-N-G-U-S. Genghis. And we have Captain John Orlando, Sergeant Peter Williams, Jim Gabriel, better known as the Enforcer, whose story this actually is. And then the evil is acronym SKULL, S-K-U-L-L, which we don't know what that stands for. But Jim, the Enforcer, and Captain Orlando are speaking here in Orlando's office. Actually, Gabriel is being spoken to by the captain because the captain is not pleased with how Gabriel has been doing things as the enforcer. They are on the next to top floor of their building. Well, across the street, a building that is several floors higher than theirs, is an individual that has unpacked a rather nasty looking gun here, a weapon of some sort. And I thought at first it was a missile launcher, but apparently it is a particle beam weapon of some sort. And it takes aim, or he, I should say, takes aim at the window that he sees the enforcer in and unleashes a BADOOM badoom. And then we pull back and we are looking over the shoulder of this hirsute assassin, and we see that the window is smoking. Several of the surrounding windows are broken out by what he just did. He tells us, "You are now nothing more than memory, Enforcer," which I believe... No, we do see Enforcer here before. "The Skull Empire has now rid themselves of their greatest enemy," he says. Go to the room. Inside, Enforcer is holding a roof beam up off of his friend and tells us how difficult it is and how injured he is, but finally stands, throwing off the beam so that he can pull his friend, Captain Orlando, out of the worst of the fire just in time for the actual fireman to appear and take Orlando off of Gabriel's hands. Down at street level, we have the ubiquitous, "How is he, Doc? Tell it to me straight." Ugh. Such creative writing. That's the enforcer. And the doctor says, "We're not sure. Smoke inhalation, first and second degree burns, internal bleeding. The x-ray results should give us a..." My gosh, your burns and injuries are nearly healed. How? So we see that the enforcer, if not evidenced by him holding up half a roof by himself here and throwing it off physically, we now see that he has... very rapid healing properties. So this individual is enhanced somehow, the enforcer, Mr. Gabriel. Next up, down at street level, is probably Orlando's second in command. That is Sergeant Peter Williams. And he's telling the enforcer, "You know, this case, we don't know what's going on. The case that you were talking to the captain about, we don't know, but we do have a lead on that one." So the enforcer runs off thinking that maybe the initial case they were discussing will give him a lead to whomever just did this to he and his best friend, Captain Orlando. He runs off. We have a panel of a news reporter that's in the midst of giving the news and then says, "What the vigilante named the enforcer has just run by. Perhaps he'll be able to bring the culprits responsible to justice." And the next panel, we see a female with Bride of Frankenstein stripes in her hair. That's what it reminds me of. It's like a, or if you want a more up-to-date reference, a double rogue, X-Men's rogue with the white streak, the skunk streak in her hair. So this woman has two over each eyeball running through her hair. What? Number 152, send for Agent 67 to me now. Yes, number one. So this organization, which we're going to assume is Skull, because she has a little skull brooch on one of her breasts here on her outfit. Everyone is a number. And we all know, of course, that one is the loneliest. A huge, huge meeting room that she meets 67 in. She is up well above and in a recessed portion of the room. He is down on the floor. Looks very much like some kind of arena fighting space, right? Or something like that, the way that it's designed. So she's asking him, what's up? And he's like, well, I killed the dude. And she said, you know, they go back and forth now that she has found out via this news report that she was just watching on the telly that Enforcer's dead, even though 67 said Enforcer, or she found out the Enforcer is not dead, excuse me, even though 67 came in and reported that the Enforcer was. So number one here tells him, okay, well, whatever, go kill him. And this time, if you don't, you're dead. Next, we are told, let us draw our attention elsewhere for now to a small old building somewhere in the Windy City. The building is acceptable in appearance. The surrounding citizens think it's a normal building. None know it houses the man called Jim Gabriel. Which, I mean, yeah, he is Jim Gabriel, but I would think he's called the Enforcer. But that's not what they said. So he's in some kind of control room here. Finally, he throws off his robe, and he's got a cute little pair of Speedos on, and he's got a very, hirsute? Is that the right word? A very hairy, bear-like body, shall we say, the way it's drawn. He's put on a bodysuit, runs outside, starts jumping around the buildings, going somewhere. I mean, he really doesn't know who to go look for or, you know, where to find anybody. He's just out there, I guess, blowing off some steam. But as he's running, he's thinking, and then he says out loud, but I'll find you, whoever you are, and I'll find you. When I do, you'll pay. I swear it! And then off to the side here, someone says, who are you talking to, boy? Your God? I hope so, because you're going to meet him. And then page turn, full page, we see a dude in some sort of closer-fitting body armor, not a big, bulky kind of armor, right? More like a contemporary Iron Man suit rather than that first suit that he made in the caves of Afghanistan, right? You're going to die. The Skull Empire has ordered your death. And interestingly enough, when he says Skull Empire, it's not an acronym the way they did it here, although everywhere else it has appeared as an acronym. Here it's just the word Skull. So I don't know. Would it be, though, I guess, if you're referring to the Skull, it should still be an acronym because that stands for something if you're talking about that empire. So it would be the entire – if you set it out, you'd say everything empire. And so if you abbreviate it, it would have to be an acronym, not just a word. I guess the letterer – who is that? Oh, it's Genghis here, too. He must have missed the periods there, the dots. The Skull Empire has ordered your death. Your existence has been considered to be a threat. I'm here to carry out those orders. Well, and as we know for the second time, because I missed on the first one. And this person yells out, 67. We know this is 67. He yells out, assassins! And three, six. Six men appear from the eaves of the building. They're on a rooftop, and it's kind of a three-quarters image. And so you can see some sides of the rooftop, and the men are throwing themselves up over as if they had climbed up the building. They attack him at 67's command here, and we have several panels unto two full pages of fighty fight. And the Enforcer is doing pretty well. Each of these assassins are dressed in ninja-esque garb with a huge skull on their chest. And a very definite skull-looking skull, not like the Punisher's, like, symbolic skull. He's taking them down and he's counting in his head. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. All right, I'm done with them. And he has this little, like a 6-inch rod that he's been holding. And at you know, some kind of command, whatever he did, it extends out to the length of a full staff. So when he takes out the final dude, he enlarges this small rod to a full-size staff and then attacks 67, ultimately bringing him down with some type of flying kick. I don't know what the official name would be. Breaking the dude's mask. He had like a see-through portion in the front of his mask, of his body armor. And he stays down. I guess he maybe broke his neck. I'm not sure. But the final two panels are the Enforcer. There are unanswered questions. Answers I must find. And the biggest question is, who are the Skull? And it's the acronym here. And we're told end. All of this happened at night, too, because there's an image here, the final panel of a full moon. Are you missing out? Subscribe now and the next 12 exciting issues of Elflord or Samurai will be mailed to your door at a saving of more than 12% of the newsstand price. So it's a subscription piece for either Elflord or Samurai. We're looking at $18 US for 12 issues of either one. They also have t-shirts. And then the bottom half of that page is the official Samurai Fan Club membership entry. Inside back panel is an advertisement for Stark Future, another Aircell comic coming up soon. It's going to be 12 to 18 issues, something like that, lasting from, what, April-ish? Probably the summer of 1986. So it goes until, maybe the summer of 88, roughly. And in the back panel, which I put out a request on Facebook, is a picture. And it has six individuals on it, but there is nothing anywhere that I can find, not even on the Grand Comics listing for this book, telling me who these people are. I would assume that one of these people must be Barry Blair. I think I know which one that is, but I'm not sure. One of these gentlemen actually looks a lot like the way Toshiro is drawn, so he may have been the model for Samurai, the main character of the book. The others, I don't know. Suits, jackets, they're sitting on a stoop kind of thing. One of them has red hair. Well, he has the about half of his hair colored red on the very top of his head, black hair down the sides. No idea who any of those people are. But there we go, guys. That is probably the last Samurai issue that I will talk about on the podcast. I'll be looking at Star Slayer issue number 5 and Twisted Tales issue number 1. Now, by the time this comes out, you will have listened to the first multi-part, multi-episode, however you want to put it, monthly drop for my Pacific Comics coverage. I will have talked about Captain Victory and the Galactic Rangers 6, Ms. Mystic 1, and Pacific Presents 1. Now, that format, when I get to months that have multiple books, that is what I hope to do moving forward when I encounter that. So let me know how that went or how that feels or whatever. I'll try to keep the episodes to about an hour in length and cover all of the books that I want to talk about in how many hour segments it takes, and then I'll release those all at one time. So let me know how that goes. But Pacific Comics, Star Slayer issue number 5 and Twisted Tales issue number 1. Next time, thanks for listening. This time, I'll see you guys later. Ciao.